This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora, welcome to another beautiful show of Books Uncovered.
Kia ora.
My name's Holly.
And I'm Bella.
And Bella's just arrived here at the studio and she's finished her job.
I am. I'm leaving the Port Chalmers Library to be full-time at the university bookshop.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Bit of a whirlwind morning, I think you've had.
Yes, Holly's been very forgiving of me having to change the time about 50 million times.
but that's just how it rolls. We are pretty excited about what we're going to talk about today. It's a bit out there, but different from our other ones, I think. So we're going to talk about hybrid text. So for those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's a sort of literature that blends elements from different genres, styles, and forms to create a unique narrative experience. So it's not a fixed or predictable path, sort of working like across different disciplines. I sort of see it as like contemporary storytelling. Mm. It's like blurring the boundaries that can sometimes be quite restrictive. I think sort of art writing kind of comes to mind as well. I think that sort of falls into that kind of category of hybrid text.
Would you consider, like, I know this is quite common in memoir, is like a blending of like fiction and nonfiction when someone's telling a memoir story? Would that come into that? I was just reading a bit about it when I was like researching.
I think so, because some of the people, well, two of the books that authors that I'm going to talk about, I was reading some reviews and they were like, is it real or isn't it? Mm. So it's kind of, yeah, I guess maybe a little bit uncertain. I mean, where would you put it in a bookshop, right? I guess it would go under essays or literature, like books on books.
Yeah, I feel like there should be like a bookshop should have like a weird book section. Not derogatory, but like in a good way. So like, I love a weird little book.
Ambiguous.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking about it and I was like, oh, I consider this form of writing to be quite progressive and that it reflects the ways in which society, gender, and our engagement of the modern world are experienced. Mm. I don't think, I tried to look to see when the term was coined, but I didn't come up with anything.
Yeah, I was looking up, it's quite a difficult one to research. I think I was looking up hybrid text and it kept coming up with like hybrid textbooks for like, it was a lot of teaching. I was like, yes, this is what I want.
I saw that as well. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's other words for it perhaps. But yeah, maybe it just refuses to have a name and that's the whole part of
we
it.
We cannot categorize it.
No one can put hybrid text in a box. So who have you brought in to talk about today?
My first book it's called Blackout by Justin Torres. So I found this book, I actually first heard of it a while ago after it won the 2023 National Book Award in the US. This is the first time I've heard of this writer, but this is actually his second novel. His first book, which is called We the Animals, was also very well received. Blackouts was won a whole bunch of awards. And so I was like, oh, and I was reading the blurb. I was like, this sounds perfect. And it is a good example for our genre. I was reading about interviews with the author about like his backstory and how he came to write this book. And I thought it was really interesting that he sort of came to it from when he worked as a bookseller and he was assigned to deal with a collection of donated books that were, he assumed were from the home of someone who had recently died. And what he found in the boxes were works by writers like Radcliffe Hall, Jean Genet, excuse my awful French pronunciation, and like a lot of vintage erotica, gay smut and lesbian smut. So he started to imagine the person that would own that library. And so someone queer, obviously, someone who'd come of age and lived through a series of cultural moments that really echoed broader queer moments in American history. And that was sort of the beginning of his history, his journey to blackouts. I thought this was a really brilliant book. It's a really hard book to tell people like what it's about. Like, I've tried multiple times and I can't quite do it, which I think, I think that failure to communicate what it's about is kind of also the point of the novel, which the novel traces a queer history that is necessarily and purposefully incomplete, and it tries to undo erasure through more erasure. So there's a lot of blackout poetry in it, which is where the name Blackouts comes from.
Okay.
And that's like quite a useful reference point in terms of the novel structure and in terms of its content.
So for people who don't know what blackout poetry is, that's...
So you'll take a text and then blackout words to create a new...
text.
A new text.
It's a really fun poetry exercise to do with kids.
Yeah, you did it at the Port Chambers Library, didn't
you? I did too.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So in this book, blackout poetry is made from a book called Sex Variance. Well, it's actually a study. So it was a study of homosexuality published in 1941, which I just thought that was a really beautiful and striking way to use something that really othered queer people to tie it into this narrative about like undoing the erasure of queer history. You just have to read it to sort of fully understand it. It's a really hard book to explain. Essentially, it's a prolonged conversation between two queer men. One is dying and one is witnessing him dying. And so they take turns telling stories from their lives and from the lives of other people. And they jump through time, space and genre. And then the result of that is kind of like a queer archive. So it's all sorts of things. It's like historical figures, literary references, and there's images woven together with personal narrative, which does include Torres's own previously published writing. So there's a lot of different stuff going on to like make the narrative.
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah. I read a really good line in someone's review that says Blackouts is queer history that queers history. And I was like, that's a really good description.
Awesome.
Of it. So
when
yeah.
was it published?
I think it was either 2023 or 2022.
Okay.
So it's not, it's pretty recent.
Quite recent.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I said exactly the same time.
In sync. I really recommend it. It's pretty ambitious and at times it's quite overwhelming novel, but when I read it, I sort of felt like I was existing in this dream-like state. You're just sort of witnessing a conversation between two people, and I think the way that he ties in all these different formats of like, it's like reports and poetry, images, all sorts of different stuff, how that ties together is really effective. So
I just love how it really captures your imagination, this, you know, being in a bookstore. I think I can relate because I used to work in a secondhand bookstore in London, and yeah, like opening up a box of books and then imagining, wondering who owned that text.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
That whole narrative you can sort of make up about someone's life and
what
they experienced. But
cool.
Highly recommend. It's
really
a hard book to explain, but
Well, I think all the books we're going to be talking about today, trying to talk about, are hard to. Well, yeah, they're hard to explain. I guess it's just sort of giving a bit of a sketch about them. I'm going to talk about a lady called Lydia Davis, and I was like, I'm going to. Yeah, so she's born in 1947, just to sort of contextualise who they are, because I guess I naively thought a lot of people who are doing hybrid texts are maybe in their like 30s or 40s, but younger or 20s. But no, Lydia Davis is 1947. So she's an American short story writer, novelist, essayist and translator. She's been described as the master of literary form, largely of her own invention. So this book is called Can't, Won't, and it's made up of 122 stories, with the majority of them being under one page long.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of read as like diary entries, but it's sort of, questionable whether they're fiction or aren't they. And there's like letters in there, and then some is just, they're just single lines. So I thought I would read a couple of them to give people an idea of what it's like. This one is called Men. There are also men in the world. Sometimes we forget and think there are only women. Endless hills and plains of unresisting women. We make little jokes and comfort each other and our lives pass quickly. But every now and then it is true, a man rises unexpectedly into our midst like a pine tree and looks savagely at us and sends us hobbling away in great floods to hide in caves and gullies until he is gone.
Love that.
Yeah. So it's just full of this stuff. So anyway, here's another one that's called The Language of the Telephone Company. The trouble you reported recently is now working properly. And then this last one, which is the title of the book, Can't and Won't. I was recently denied a writing prize because they said I was lazy. What they meant by lazy was that I used too many contractions. For instance, I would not write out in full the words cannot and will not, but instead contracted them to can't and won't. Which I thought was really brilliant.
That is.
So yeah, the whole book is just full of these little moments. I really enjoyed this element of freedom to pick up and put down the book whenever you wanted. It was kind of like, I kind of likened it to walking past a piano and occasionally like knocking out a tune. It felt refreshing to engage with reading in this way. It was also quite inspiring as a writer to break down the naming of a method. Like, why does poetry have to sit in one category and vice versa with like prose and fiction? So yeah, I would say that this sort of type of genre is quite good for people who have short attention spans. I can imagine people who find reading challenging or perhaps are just out of the habit of reading could find hypertext quite a great place to start.
Yeah, I can see that too. Just you can sort of jump in and jump out and not feel like disconnected from it.
Yeah. Or like committed to starting at the start and then going right through to the end. Like both of the authors that I'm bringing in today, I'm still reading, and I went to say enjoying because I am taking my time with it, I guess. And yeah, just sort of sitting with it. Yeah. It's almost kind of like how I would read poetry, I think, as well.
Yeah, it's definitely how I read poetry.
Occasionally
I'll sit down and read the whole book, but then I feel like I don't really get as much out of it as when I read it over a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, exactly. And then poetry is that thing of like you have to read it, a poem, maybe a couple of times before you keep rediscovering things within that short amount of text, or I guess the poem could be long form, but yeah. But yeah, I think of the two that I've brought in today, Lydia Davis has definitely resonated with me more.
I haven't read any of Lydia Davis's work, but I've been meaning to for ages.
And it's the first time.
Sounds like something I'd like.
Yeah, she's intriguing.
Sounds kind of, similar to, that sounds like a similar sort of setup to the book, that my other book that I've read. I'm actually still reading it as a prime example of one that I've been jumping in and out of and like sort of skipping through and getting to, which I think is what the author kind of intended. It's called Wrong Norma by Anne Carson. It's her newest collection. I think it's her new, I don't think she's put out another one. And I think it came out last year or maybe the beginning of this year.
Very recently.
So yeah, you may
Where
not.
Where did you get it?
The library.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so impressed.
I know. Because I saw it on the shelf, I was like, oh my God. So yeah, Anne Carson is probably, in my heart anyway, and probably a lot of people's hearts, one of the greatest living poets that we have today. I really liked her because she's pretty famously reticent. And I liked this quote that I think it was the publishers might have asked. And she frequently says she doesn't want her books to be published with cover copy, but she did agree to say this about her newest collection, which is Wrong Norma is a collection of writings about different things, like Joseph Conrad, Guantanamo, Snow, Poverty, Roger's Thesaurus, My Dad, Saturday Night, Socrates, Writing Sonnets, Forensics, Encounters with Lovers, The Word Idea, The Feet of Jesus, and Russian Thugs. The pieces are not linked. That's why I've called them wrong. So that quite sums it up. I do think she claims the pieces are unrelated, but I think if you're a fan of Carson or even just a casual reader, you can see that there are faint threads that connect these pieces to each other, and I think to a lot of her previous work, it was like that, the really clever wit, her brutal imagery, and a deep sympathy for the human connection. But you can read them. I like this. It's like a, yeah, it's a, that's a really cool collection. It's a very beautiful book. I recommend cracking it up.
Is it sort of, is it, no, I'm wanting to label it. Are they poems?
It's a mixture. So okay. There's poems, sort of short stories, essay type things, and there's also like collages she's made and images.
Does she use the, she's quite famous for using the slanted line?
Like the line, yeah, there's a wee bit of the slanted line. Not as much as in previous collections that I've seen from her. So yeah, I think this is a really good example of blurring the lines between prose poetry and literary fiction. And I thought each of the pieces is quite bizarre and also quite beautiful as you read through. But yeah, it's a collection of microfiction, meditations, poems, illustrations, scraps, collages, and all manner of other prosy ephemera. It's just a really cool book. It's
nice to flick through.
So some pieces like Lily Davis are only a page long, and then others get to as long as 30 pages of a connected story.
It's interesting to note that everyone that we're talking about today is American, actually, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
I think it'd be interesting to look more, see if there's any examples. I'm sure there are.
It does certainly feel like a contemporary sort of form. Like, I feel like, you know, in another 5 years it will be so much more common.
Mm. I find it, I hope so. Such a compelling way to write and read.
I used to always just kind of generalize it and call it like essay writing, but it's not.
There's a few things that I'm like looking back on. I was like, oh yeah, I think that could definitely fit into this category. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, highly recommend. It was very stimulating read.
It's the sort of book I'd want to own, I think.
Yeah, me too. I was like, I almost want to stop reading it and then buy my own copy, so then I can sort of just
market.
Read it and market. I read a really good piece of writing that, oh my God, I can't speak today. A really good sentence someone wrote about Carson's writing, where they said, her writing has, for lack of a better term, an uncanny quality, as if she translates her writing into ancient Greek and then back again into contemporary English, a game of linguistic telephone that alters and expands meaning each step along the way. So that was such a great way of describing.
What a compliment.
Her. Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, I wish I'd written that, but I will quote it on my radio show. Yeah.
Beautiful. So I'm the last person, Kate Zambrino. I'm giving everyone's birth dates. She's born in 1977, also American, novelist, essayist, critic, and professor. She teaches at the graduate nonfiction program and at Columbia University. She says that her early writing influences were people like Kathy Acker, Virginia Woolf, Sarah Kane, Margaret Duras, and David, someone with a Polish last name, David
Wojnarowicz.
Polish is just the most difficult. Yeah.
I was going to mention him. He kind of ties into my first book as well.
So I haven't heard of him before, but now I'm very interested.
I think you'd really like him.
She has been called the master. Well, Kate Zambrino has been called the master of the experimental lyric essay, and her writing is closely associated with the fragment and the diary. So this little pink book, which is very lovely to hold, it's such a nice size, was published. It's called Screen Test, published in 2019. It's divided into two parts, stories, which are a series of flash fictions that resemble essays. And essays. It says, I've copy quoted this from another website, so excuse me, but it takes its title from Andy Warhol's 1964-1966 series of black and white film portraits of artists, writers, and downtown personalities. The 62 texts in Zambrino's book, in which she ruminates on visual artists, iconic actresses, and writers, are intended to echo Warhol's Screen Test and that they vary on length and focus, each ranging from a few sentences to a few pages long. So some of the stories within the book have been published in like the Paris Review and Bomb. So she sort of like seems to pick up a thread of thought and then just like rolls with it. I did find I didn't engage with this text as much as the Lydia Davis, just because it did hit, it was so, there was so much cultural reference in it.
Mm.
And I sometimes find that just a bit bogged down. One of the reviews I read, someone was a bit scathing about it and just called it like name dropping.
Which I do think you find sometimes in this style of writing as well. Which I guess,
because it's critiquing as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's written and talked a lot about people like Kathy Acker, Susan Sontag, Clarice Lispector, that David guy again. So, yeah, I was going to read a little bit from that as well because they are snippets. So, for instance, this one is called Dogs in Video. If I turn my phone the other way. The way Joan Jonas uses her three dogs as a form of inspired accident as they run into frame or nudge her to play ball in her video work. She drew her dogs' heads over and over, like a sickness, she had said. In her 2014 video, Beautiful Dog, she attaches a GoPro camera to her poodle Ozu's collar so that we would see the world upside down through his back legs. And that's just, you know, a little... They're just like little snippets, little screen tests.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting approach.
I'd be intrigued to read it and see.
Yeah. I think I was thinking about her because she lives in New York and because she's some of the text is quite like revealing in nature and does read like a diary, and how as a writer she can kind of afford to be quite open like that because she lives in a place like New York.
Yeah.
And I was speaking about this with someone in Dunedin here, and they were saying, well, if you're not writing with an element of something to that's risky or like to lose, then it's not interesting.
Interesting.
Which is, yeah, because I think, yeah, if you were writing in this way as a New Zealander, say, everyone would be like, oh, it's old so-and-so. Because it's also
I went to school with her.
Connected, you know? Yeah. So yeah, there must be an element of
is that anonymity and
yeah. Exactly. So sort of freeing in a sense.
I guess being among a lot of other artists that are doing
a
similar level of like
reveal.
Vulnerability or
vulnerability, that's right. Yeah. And it's like I guess because in some of these is talking about other writers, but not by name, but just what they think of her. Yeah, it's quite self-aware. I think a lot of people would find it pretentious. Yeah.
Usually means I probably enjoy it. Yeah, I have one of her other books on my shelf, which I haven't actually read yet because it's on my bookshelf, which is the place where all my books go to die. So just, I don't know why. I've got so many good books I need to read.
Working in a library, I think you're surrounded by books.
That's why. And then, I'm always bringing home a stack of books.
But now you'll be at the UBS, so you'll be bringing home books that you actually own.
Yeah. Well, hopefully not as many as I bring home from the library or I'll be broke.
Yeah, that's true.
Try and read. Yeah. But I've been meaning to read it for ages. I was recommended it by a friend who ran Evening Books.
Because
she loved it. And it's sort of similar that it focuses on mad wives, I think, throughout especially literary history. Zelda Fitzgerald is an example.
Which is such a genre. Like I'm just looking at the Athenaeum Library, we've got Wifedom, which is about Orwell's wife, and there was another one, but it's a fiction story Naomi Woods has written on called The Hiding Game, and it's about Hemingway's wife.
I think it's both
scathing. We can imagine.
Like what women sacrifice to allow these volatile, power, like intelligent men to create.
The strong wahine behind the creative man. Well, you know, it's the 21st century now, so it's not like that anymore, we hope. So just before we go, I just wanted to make mention that the Athenaeum Library will be celebrating its 155th anniversary on the 8th of May. And we will be having archivist Tom Riley come and do a talk, and Lawrence Fernley, who's the shortlisted for the Occam this year, will be doing a reading, and so will Fiona Farrell. And it's all free to attend, and there'll be refreshments, And we just got some tote bags made, which is very exciting, by the print room in Dunedin. They're really beautiful and they made them so quick. I'm like, wow, great company. So, yes, we're also celebrating the Ockham shortlist winners at the moment, and we were very kindly sent the shortlisted authors for that. So that's, and we've spoken about them, I think, from most of them, like the Myers, Kirsty Gunn, the Pretty Ugly, Lawrence Fernley, the Grand Glacier Hotel, and Damien Wilkin.
Delirious,
which I haven't read yet.
Neither, but I was actually just talking about it at the library this morning, and it's people love it.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who wins that prize. I'm reading the Grand Glacier Hotel and enjoying being on the West Coast at the moment, which is where it's set. But yeah, cool. I guess that's us for this round.
We'll see you next time.
Ka kite.
Ka kite. Books Uncovered, exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.